God himself, the
Lamb. Let's read from Genesis 12, verses 4 through 9. Genesis 12, verses 4 through 9. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Then Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their possessions that they had gathered, and the people whom they had acquired in Haran, and they departed to go to the land of Canaan. So they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land to the place of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Morah. And the Canaanites were in the land. Then the Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." And there he built an altar to the Lord, whom had appeared to him. And he moved from there to the mountain east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. So Abram journeyed, going on still, toward the south. At the end of Genesis 11, we were introduced to Abram and his extended family. And in the first three verses of Genesis 12, we learned of the three important promises God made to Abram. They included land, a nation, and the Messiah, that in Abram all the families of the earth would be blessed. The rest of Genesis chapter 12 focuses on that first promise. Will we learn a little more about the land Abram and his family were going to possess? Stay tuned and we'll learn more about this land in just a moment.
God will provide himself a lamb, the only sacrifice that sin demands, just as he proved to Abraham he would provide himself a lamb. Behold the Lamb, God himself the Lamb.
Genesis 12 and verse 4 resumes the narrative of Abram as he follows the Lord to the land God was going to show to him. Abram brought his wife, Sarai, his nephew, Lot, whose father Haran had died back in Ur, and all of his possessions, his servants, and his goods with him to this new land. Dr. James E. Smith writes about this section of Scripture, "Abram began to discover God's blessings in the promised land. He passed through the land, surveying his inheritance in its length and breadth. At last, he came to the spot which would later be called Shechem. To be more precise, he camped at the Oak of Moreh, or the Teacher's Oak." As Abram began his journey, his tour of this new land, he encountered all of the native inhabitants. The Bible tells us that the Canaanites were in the land. And there's this interesting mention that we just noted that Dr. Smith remarked about, of a tree, the tree of Morah, or the terebinth tree, as some translations call it. Now, this is a very peculiar mention here, and I want to read you an excerpt from Dr. Nahum Sarna's commentary, the JPS Torah commentary, where he describes what this tree was all about. "The terebinth tree of Morah, undoubtedly some mighty tree with sacred occasion, sacred associations. Morah must mean teacher, oracle giver. This tree or cluster of trees was so conspicuous and so famous that it served as a landmark to identify other sites in the area. The phenomenon of a sacred tree, particularly one associated with a sacred site, is well known in a variety of cultures. A distinguished tree, especially one of great antiquity, might be looked upon as the tree of life, or as being cosmic, its stump symbolizing the navel of the earth, and its top representing heaven. In this sense, it is a bridge between the human and the divine spheres, and it becomes an arena of divine human encounter, an ideal medium of oracles and revelation, Fertility cults flourished in connection with such trees, and this form of paganism proved attractive to many Israelites. Now notice what Dr. Sarna is telling us here. When Abram came into the land, he was coming from a background of years spent among the Babylonians. In Ur of the Chaldeans, Abram would have been exposed to all kinds of idolatry, but both history and the Bible tell us that there was something markedly different about the kind of idolatrous practices that were observed among the Canaanites. In fact, later revelation in some of the historical writings of Moses and the books of Joshua, the book of Judges, and beyond show the intense depravity and the deplorable nature of the Canaanite worship practices. We read in the Bible that they would sacrifice children unto the pagan god Molech, that they would practice all types of fornication rituals unto their various gods and deities. And so when Abram arrives in this new land, one of the first things he encounters is the worship of the Canaanites. Genesis 12 and verse number 6 says, he passed through the land of Shechem, as far as the terebinth tree of Morah, and the Canaanites were in the land. And it was at this exact moment, notice, at this exact moment that God appeared to Abram. Verse 7, God told him, to your descendants I will give this land. So what does Abram do? He's looking around, he's seeing the sacred tree and all of the worship associated with it, the false idols being prayed to and worship. What does he do? He first receives a message from God confirming the promise that we read in the first three chapters of the first three verses of the chapter, and then he builds an altar to the Lord. Can you imagine the onlooking Canaanites who were engrossed in their worship around this significant ancient tree, watching this 75-year-old man begin to stack stones, to take an animal, to cut it, and to burn it upon that altar in proclamation of the one true living God? What a spectacle, what a sight it would have been. What faith Abram had to worship the God of heaven and earth, the Creator God, in the midst of this idolatry. Now, there's a contrast being presented to us here between the pagan Canaanites and the faithful Abram. And it says of Abram, after he built this altar in verse number 8, he called on the name of the Lord. The expression calling on the name of the Lord is a biblical way of describing people who, in the face of rebellion and apostasy and iniquity around them, stand for God. Those who listen to the Lord and obey His commandments. And truly, this is the perfect description of Abram in this place. The Lord appeared to him and said, "This is the land that will belong to your descendants." Dr. Warren Wiersbe writes, "Obedience leads to a new assurance and new promises from God." What comfort it must have brought when Abraham and Sarah had this fresh revelation of God as they arrived in a strange and dangerous land. Incredible faith on display. But now I want you to notice that there's another crisis point in the narrative, and it comes to us in verses 9 and 10. Abram continued his journey going to the south, or the Negev in some versions. And verse 10 says, "Now there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down to Egypt to dwell there, for the famine was severe in the land." One of the most remarkable features of the Bible is that it does not shy away from telling us the faults and flaws of its greatest characters. Of course, part of the purpose of the Bible in telling us the sins of its great champions of faith is so that we can relate to them. Abraham's not that dissimilar to us. He had struggles and temptations, and sometimes he failed in his obedience to God. But also, by seeing the sin of these great men and women of faith, we are reminded of the splendor and uniqueness of Jesus Christ, the one who was tempted in all points just as we are, yet was without sin. There was a famine in the land of Canaan, not uncommon in this part of the world, and instead of trusting that God would provide for him and his household, Abram sought refuge and food in Egypt. Now, like Babylon, Egypt is a famous biblical place noted for its rebellion against the Lord. Nothing good comes from going to Egypt. It brings heartache, hardship, and adversity. Abram packs up his household and goes to this foreign land. And let's look at what happens next. Genesis chapter 12, beginning in verse 11. It came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, that he said to Sarai his wife, "Indeed, I know that you're a woman of beautiful countenance. Therefore, it will happen when the Egyptians see you that they will say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me. But they will let you live. Please, say you are my sister, that it may be well for me for your sake, and that I may live because of you." Abram is going to a place where he expects to encounter some hostiles, and he concocts this lie, this deception, with his wife. She was to say that they're not married, but they're just siblings. And so perhaps then they would not consider murdering Abram so that they might steal his wife. Let's read on, beginning in verse 14. "So it was, when Abram came into Egypt, that the Egyptians saw the woman. She was very beautiful. The princes of Pharaoh also saw her and commended her, to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken to Pharaoh's house. He treated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female servants, female donkeys and camels. But the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, 'What is this that you have done to me? Oh, why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister? I might have taken her as my wife. Now, therefore, here is your wife. Take her and go away.' So Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had." Now, this is an interesting account. Abram and Sarai come up with this lie, and when they get down there and espouse these mistruths, these untruths, these falsities, the Bible says that Pharaoh's household believes that Sarai would be a notable and noteworthy woman, would make a good bride for Pharaoh. So she was brought into his household. And then plagues descended upon Egypt. Obviously, this sort of parallels what we see in the book of Exodus, when God sent the 10 plagues upon the Egyptians. But plagues come and devastate the land. And the Egyptian Pharaoh knows that this is a sign from heaven that something is not right. So he discovers the truth about the marital relationship between Abram and Sarai. He gives them a bunch of stuff and sends them away. Now, this is strange. If it was wrong for Abram to lie, why does he get so much stuff out of this? And I want to read from Dr. Warren Wiersbe, who describes exactly what's going on here. "A casual observer of this episode might conclude, well, what happened to Abraham wasn't all that bad. Pharaoh gave Abraham a lot of wealth, and Sarah was given her own maid, Hagar. God forgave Abraham's sin, and he started over again. So what's the big problem? The big problem is that everything Abraham received in Egypt later caused trouble. Because of their great wealth, Abraham and Lot could not live together and had to separate. Hagar, the Egyptian maidservant, brought division and sorrow into the home. Having had a taste of Egypt, Lot started measuring everything by what he saw there, and this led to his downfall and the ruin of his family." There are no benefits from disobedience, end quote. This is a great explanation from Dr. Wiersbe's commentary. He notes that it may appear at first glance that Abraham was blessed by his lie, but in fact, everything Abraham gained in Egypt brought ruinous, devastating consequences upon him and his family. Trust in God. Stay in the land God has designated for you. Stay right where you are and serve the Lord. Don't look to the world, to Egypt, for blessings and benefits. Rather, do what Abram did at the start. In the midst of chaos and iniquity around you, build an altar to the Lord and call upon His name.
Although Abraham could not understand how God in His great love could ask him for the only son he had. Yet when it seemed to him all hope was dim, his faith, this promise.